Welcome to the Divine Feminine Healers Podcast. It is your host, Angelica. I am an Ayurvedic practitioner, yogini, Reiki master, and intuitive guide. But above all else, I simply want to be known as your spiritual friend, just walking alongside you on this healing journey. You are guided here for a divine reason. Let's unlock your fullest potential. Hello, beautiful people. Welcome back to the Divine Feminine Healers Podcast. It's your host, Angelica here, spiritual business owner and Ayurvedic practitioner. And I'm so excited to have today's guest on the podcast back for another episode, the talented, the marvelous, incredibly gifted Dr. Claudia Welch. Before we get into today's episode, I do want to give an update on what's happening celestially and energetically. Some of you know, as I talked about in the last podcast, that we are officially in eclipse season, or as I like to call this, eclipse portal, which is signified by the solar eclipse, which we had on the new moon in Libra, which happened November 25th. And it'll complete its cycle and end the portal on the new moon in Aries when there is a lunar eclipse. And so eclipse cycles are really good for introspection, for spiritual growth, silence, time with yourself. You may feel called to seek out spiritual knowledge this time, to seek out learning more about your subconscious programmings. I know I've had incredible insights within this last week that it kind of just completely shifted my perspective on the world and even my dharma. So things like this can come up during eclipse cycles. It kind of shakes our ground a little bit and it reveals the truth. And so sometimes for us, this can feel a little bit like our world is being shaken up. However, it can bring great transformation. So that's why it's a really good time to find stillness as these new codes are being downloaded in our system, so to speak, so that we can really have a place for them to land, so that you can really create a space for these intuitive downloads to come through. So I personally have been really liking the introspective time, and I'm so grateful that I do allow myself that space for those ideas to land. And while it's really great for spiritual growth, it's a time to pause on acting on those intuitive insights until the cycle is complete. And that's because a lot of times these insights, they come with a lot of different insights to follow. There's a lot that's still being transformed. So to take a pause and wait till after the lunar eclipse to act on those ideas is best recommended, so that you can wait to see what else is going to be revealed during this eclipse portal. You may feel like, oh my gosh, what more can be revealed? I feel like I got one of the deepest insights I've ever had. And stay close to that. Listen and see if there's anything more that you need to learn about that and how that can evolve for you. So sending you all lots of compassion during this time, and sending you all lots of sacred time for pause and silence to go inward. I'll be sharing more insights on what's happening with the new moon in Aries and the lunar eclipse that's happening Tuesday, November 8th in the coming days, as I always share those journal prompts and insights on my Instagram page, so you can follow in the link in the show notes if you're not already following me, but also a really good time to continue that further inquiry. Also, what I've been picking up on our community, separate than what's happening in the eclipse cycle, or not so separate actually, is a lot of you are wanting to take your spiritual business to the next level. So you're really inquiring on, what are the subconscious belief patterns that are holding me back? And I've been talking with you, a lot of you, in my DMs on Instagram, because I've been so passionate about guiding women to grow their spiritual businesses. Honestly, the past few years, I've been doing it kind of behind the scenes with a woman that I work with one-on-one in my certification programs. And it's been such a blessing to see them really step into their business and learn how to structure it and step into their power and attract clients with ease. And it's something that I've been sharing just a little bit with all of you, my tips and resources on Instagram. It's been so great to get all my new followers who are interested in growing their spiritual business. And what I'm hearing is the main challenge right now is finding clarity in your business. So usually people come to me because they're trying to find consistent clients. There's so much variability that happens with inconsistent clients, which translates to inconsistent income. And so the main issue that I see is this lack of clarity of not knowing who your ideal client is, not having the proper structures in place so that you are feeling nourished from your income. And so that you have the proper systems in place to support your client and really building this know, like, and trust relationship with them, of educating them, of nurturing them, of listening to their needs, and being able to offer really sound support and creative solutions, as I know so many of you can do. It's really about just patching up. Where are the leakages that are happening in my business? How can I patch these up and truly find clarity in my business? And half of this is taking aligned action of knowing the steps to grow your business, especially under the lens of growing a spiritual business. I find it has been so different than any business skills that I have honed of just growing any old business. And the other piece of that is really understanding what subconscious beliefs are in there that are keeping me from taking action. Because so many I hear from you is like, okay, I know what I need to do in my business. I know I need to start up my social media account, and I want to come up with a marketing plan for my offering, and I want to create these free resources, but there's something holding me back and I don't know what it is. But when I sit down to start it, I get distracted, or I start working on all these other things, or I get swooped in and wanting to create membership and podcasts, and then I don't take any action at all. And so this tells me that there is a blockage. There's a belief getting in the way. And the one that I hear the most is not trusting your ability to succeed. There's some part of you that fears if you hit a certain level of success that you're not going to be able to maintain it. And so you self-sabotage by keeping yourself small, by not taking the action steps that you need to find the clarity in your business. And this is why I created my 5-day challenge to grow your spiritual social media account, is so that you can have that structure for learning how to grow it, really clear steps. And at the same time, how can we address these fears that seem to be guiding our action steps in the background? And I do want to share, someone who is in our challenge right now shared what a profound transformation that she had from doing the challenge. And I want to share this with everyone just so you can get inspired. She said, from the first 3 sessions of the challenge, I gained so much clarity about what it looks like to structure my spiritual business. It was really helpful, and that I felt it helped me align my mindset, what I should be focusing on. The content that you taught about seeing the aura of my social media page helped so much, especially as a clairvoyant. It helped me to visualize it, and I gained so much information from that. For some reason, it hadn't fully occurred to me that my business would have a distinct, authentic aura like that. When that clicked, I found a lot more clarity. So clarity can definitely be reached in this challenge. And there's so much juicy wisdom in there. You can now purchase the challenge with the link in the show notes. There are 5 recorded sessions. I guide you through my 5-step process on growing your spiritual social media account and attracting aligned clients. And as you all know, I'm super passionate about having you grow your spiritual business, because we all need more of your gifts, healers. The world needs it so much. So I would love nothing more than you being more visible and making that dream possible for you. And on that note, I have a really fun announcement coming out next week. And it is in this realm of growing your spiritual business. It is of this realm of how Ayurveda and business play together. And I'm so excited to share with you. I've been working behind the scenes for a while on this, and I'm putting the finishing touches on it. So if you want first access to know when this offer comes out, just follow me on Instagram at the link in the show notes, Angelica Feminine Healer. And I can't wait to share it with you all. Okay, now for today's episode, the beautiful and talented Dr. Claudia Welch. So if you don't already know Dr. Claudia Welch and you're in the Ayurveda scene, I'm not quite sure, where have you been? Maybe hiding underneath a rock. She is such a cornerstone and a beacon of light for us in the Ayurveda community. She has extensive knowledge in Eastern medicine as a whole. She's actually a doctor of Oriental medicine, and she's the author of the fabulous book, Balance Your Hormones, Balance Your Life. And that book has really transformed, I think, how women understand how to heal their hormones. And she has such a great gift of helping women and guiding them through different transitions in their life. That book is so packed full with lots of nutrients and helping women heal. And I use it all the time in my programs with women. She has also lectured internationally on Oriental medicine and Ayurveda, explaining how Eastern medicine applies to women's health. She's on the teaching faculty of the Ayurvedic Institute, Kripalu School of Ayurveda, Southwest acupuncture college and acupractice seminars. She truly is an embodiment of this Vedic wisdom, of someone who truly just lives and breathes it. I love being in her presence, and I'm so excited for you to get to feel her radiance and her strong electromagnetic field in this episode. So what do we go to in this episode? So the first topic that we went into was talking about, can our dharma evolve ever? And I love her response on this. And the reason why I asked this question is because a lot of women in our community who have spiritual businesses are feeling like they want to change their offerings. They're feeling like, and I hear this a lot, they were in the physical realm of just working with diet or just working with workouts, and they're wanting something deeper. They're wanting to go into subconscious belief patterns, into emotional healing, into spirituality. They want to shift, and it feels like their world is being rocked, and oh my gosh, my dharma is changing. And I love this response of Dr. Claudia Welch, really redefining what dharma is, that dharma is something living in our soul that does not change. There is the difference between dharma and karma. And so she distinctly gives us the definition of each and how it's actually your karma that shifts when you're wanting to change something like your offering in your business. And it gives, for those who are wanting to make those shifts in their business, this conversation gives a lot of clarity on how you can take action in coming back to your soul's purpose. We also go into, are there any parts of Ayurveda that we're going to find that are not holding to true given our current reality right now? You know, sometimes Ayurveda can get so specific down to the diet, and it's, and I question, can we really find this relative in our day and age right now? Or is there room for any bit of wiggle here? And this is something that I've contemplated for a very long time, as sometimes I go in and out of fully trusting Ayurveda and believing in it to questioning certain aspects of it and needing to redefine it for myself. So I really love this conversation on it. It's really near and dear to my heart as I've gone through a huge period of having to reflect on what Ayurveda means to me and how this divine feminine expression wants to reveal itself through it. And what parts of Ayurveda can we hold as true, and which parts are we dancing with to find our own truth? It's a really heady conversation, as some of you know. I love going there in the conversation. So I really love that part of the podcast. And this segues into a really important conversation about appropriation in Ayurveda, because it really is such a fine line of being able to express your authenticity with it, but then also where can we honor the ancient lineage? And so Dr. Claudia Welch gives us really good resource for how we know if there's culture appropriation in Ayurveda, how we can be leaders in Ayurveda, for those who are Ayurvedic practitioners, to stand in our integrity and to stand in the integrity of the lineage in which it came from. And so I have that link for the culture appropriation tools and resources in the show notes as well. And the last part of the conversation we dove into is understanding the depth of your Vrikruti, your current imbalance, and your Prakruti, your constitution. And can your constitution change given different environment, different given life circumstances? Even though we are always taught that our constitution never changes, it's who you are. This is something that I've been also contemplating. And I know that a lot of my audience is questioning, how do we even determine the difference between these two? And sometimes they seem like they're the same. They seem like they're different. So Dr. Claudia Welch completely debunks this, gives us really good clarity. What is our current balance and what is our constitution? So there is something in this episode a little bit for everyone. I know I kind of run the gamut here, but I have just so many deep questions and I always love hearing her insights from it. So I wanted to be sure that each person in my community felt seen and heard. So there's a lot of juicy stuff here and I hope you all enjoy it. If you do enjoy it, please share it with a friend, family member, spiritual sister who wants to listen to this episode. You know she's going to love it too. I would love to share this wisdom as much as we can. And if you want to get more of Dr. Claudia Welch's magic, you can find her in the link in the show notes. She shares one of her new membership-based classes, which is called Satsangam. And she kind of debunks a lot of these myths in Ayurveda and really getting to the heart of the definition of these Vedic words so that we can come back to and honor the ancient lineage. So you can find all of her stuff in the link in the show notes. And without further ado, sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. I am honored, overjoyed, so excited to have Dr. Claudia Welch back on the podcast again for another episode. I'm just so excited for this conversation. Thank you so much for your time and for being here.
It's my real pleasure. Thanks for providing a space for doing this. And thanks everybody for being here. I love hearing how the divine feminine expresses herself through each person. So I'd love to hear, how do you connect with the divine feminine, and how do you feel like that energy expresses through you?
It's such a beautiful question. And I love being asked different questions than I'm often asked, and I don't get asked that very often. So thanks for the beautiful question. It's interesting. The thing that I need to tune into at every moment of my life that I don't always, but when I remember to tune into something, the thing that I need to tune into is my innermost essence. And I'm never analyzing that, like which part of that is the feminine and which part of that is the masculine. What's the mother? What's the father? What's the sister? What's the brother? It doesn't feel like it has those attributes to me. My innermost essence feels like essence, and essence feels non-dual to me. And so I don't spend time in my personal practice and my personal life trying to touch the feminine, trying to tune in to the divine mother, the divine feminine. I'm just looking to tune into that essence. I mean, that's really true for me. And when I'm really connecting to another person, whether I'm tuning into you or even to the listeners that I can't see, or to my husband or to my nieces or my nephews, I'm not trying to tune into their masculine aspects or their feminine aspects. And to me, that innermost essence in them or myself doesn't feel dual. It doesn't feel like I could even put a spotlight on the masculine or feminine of that essence. So I don't feel like I'm trying to, in my life, tune into the feminine. That's not to say that it doesn't manifest in some ways. Like, I think while I'm not looking for that, a great part of my professional life and Grihastha, the second stage of life, the householder stage of life, has almost accidentally been very much connected to the feminine in terms of manifested physical feminine women's health, right? Women's health is a big part of what I've done. And so when I teach, most of the people I'm teaching, when I was in practice, most of the people I was working with were women, by far and away the bigger percentage. And there's something amazing that happens. Every woman knows this. There's something amazing that happens in a room full of women. There's something great also that can happen in a room with co-edness, right? And, you know, with this, I haven't had enough groups of women that include trans women, that include non-binary people that are identifying themselves in that way. So there's certainly magic that can happen everywhere. But in the rooms that I've been in, where at least what I'm seeing and people are identifying themselves as women, there's an incredible thing that happens. And it is different than when there's men present. And I think that in a way we are tuning into some aspect of the divine feminine that everyone can tune into, not only if they're cis women, but also if they're trans women, non-binary or men. Everybody could tune into that aspect if they don't impose themselves on the space. You know, a group of women changes if one man walks in. It just does, right? And a lot of women will know this, right? You're nodding your head. Have you had that experience?
For sure. I mean, I'm even just thinking of my parents, you know, and they have very much your typical, my dad is very masculine energy and my mom is very much feminine energy. And just, it's so interesting, even just when they walk in a room, like, you know, even as a kid, you know, when my dad's there, it's like, sit up straight, behave. And then when my mom's there, there's this kind of softness and there's this kind of ease and flow that I kind of feel. So for sure.
Yeah, I think it's not certainly not a secret for women. It might be a little bit more mysterious for men, because as soon as they walk in the room, the energy changes. So they don't see how it was often. There are those men like in my life who are more like girlfriends than male friends, because they can drop right into that space really easily. And so I think that is how I experience the divine feminine in a conscious way that I'm not looking for the divine feminine in that group of women. It just happens. And it's so receptive. There's less kind of ego dominant games, that kind of stuff in general. I'm certainly painting with a broad brush here, but it's often very inclusive. It's often very accepting. It's often in these spaces that I've been in, you know, at a seminar or something like that. You know, certainly women can be catty and judgmental, and we can, you know, we can be ambitious, we can be competitive, all of those things. But there's a lot of spaces that I've been in where it's a safe space. And what happens with that energy with women does feel like divine feminine. So I would say that that's a way that I have touched it and tuned into it that I haven't even tried. It's just happened, but it's wonderful. It's really wonderful.
Yeah, I love that so much. How first it relates to your personal practice. If I'm in meditation, I'm not in particular even reaching out to a certain deity necessarily, unless there's a specific ceremony I'm doing. It's just turning into that divine essence. And that's enough. It's plenty for me to absorb and to get my fill that I need and my connection to source. And I have a community of women, and it's something really special that happens when women come together. And I don't know if it's because we've, at least in this short time, have gotten away from that. And when women are together, it's just like, oh, it's so powerful. And it's something that has been missed for a while, that it just feels like home. And there's these deep bonds and connections. When the divine masculine is all together too, that there's its own power and force that can happen as well. It's just something, again, like you said, it just happens. Something we've been drawn to. I too have been drawn to women, helping women heal with their hormones, and just gathering together a community of women. That just seems to be this kind of part of my dharmic path. And it's beautiful to see it all play out like that.
It is. And, you know, I'm remembering this. It was some performance that I went to see that had co-ed performances, and there was a lot of different drumming things going on. And there was this one, I was thinking of this as a drumming thing, but I'm also remembering this dance performance, similar thing, where there was co-ed dancers in a bunch of different performances, and then one with just men. And the whole energy when it was just men changed, and it was electrifying, and both for the drumming and the dancing ones that just came into my head. And it was absolutely mesmerizing. So it's not to say that women may have something together that may not be quite as accessible to men. It's not to say that it's better. It's just different. And when I see this whole group of men doing something together, it can be so powerful too. So in the groups, it becomes really obvious to me. With individuals, it's again kind of interesting going into that essence and connecting in the essence. All of that falls away. And it doesn't feel like that powerful, wonderful thing that happens with women and that powerful, wonderful thing that happens with men. That doesn't feel wrong. It doesn't feel divisive. It just feels like what is. But it's so interesting that even all of those wonderful aspects fall away when I'm connecting one-on-one with a person, essence to essence. And that's such an interesting thing, that we might belong to a biological group, a species group, a gender group that we identify with or whatever, but all of that falls away when it's one-to-one. I'm not sure I've ever quite thought of it that way before, but do you know what I mean?
It makes me think of just identities in general, and how we have all these language for things like the doshas, for example, in Ayurveda. And it's so important to kind of hone in and get really specific. But then at a certain point, at what time does that become that we don't need to segment all of these things anymore? And what are we truly getting at is that essence, and just owning the truth of it all, but behind the mask, behind the identity. And actually, one of my questions that I had for you, because a lot of women in my community are going through these transitions, specifically in their dharma, where what used to really light them up in their dharma, it needs to evolve. Maybe there's more offerings that they're wanting to expand into. And at times this feels very difficult, because the identity of a healer, or and then moving to a teacher or something as simple as that. But it feels very, it's like a death that happens. That's really hard to let go of. And so I'm curious what you have experienced with your own identity shifts and making these transitions, how can we find ease and grace through that process?
It's a brilliant question. And you're touching on something that I've noticed a lot for decades in working with this stuff, which is that the word dharma that you used, and I forget how you put it, but something like their dharma is evolving. For me, that's not the way dharma works. Dharma doesn't evolve. Dharma is my ability to access and live up to that innermost essence. That's it. You know, that is what it is. It's not, you know, when somebody says, oh, it's my dharma to be a healer, I don't really relate to that, because what if someday you're not, you don't work in private practice, you don't work in that way, you do something else. Does that mean your dharma has changed? I think that means your karma has changed, your actions. Karma means action. Your actions have changed. But the dharma being that ability to tune into the innermost essence at any moment and the courage to live up to that, what I find there, that's my dharma. And that's why I can't choose my dharma. I can only choose to live in accordance with it or not. I can't choose what my innermost essence is. I can only tune into it. And what I find there, I can act in accordance with that. And that takes courage. So the choice is not, what dharma do I choose? The choice is, will I have the courage to live in alignment with this innermost essence or not? The actions will change minute to minute. The words will change minute to minute as that innermost essence requires. So what's changing is not the dharma. What's changing is the actions. And the commitment to the innermost essence is hopefully galvanizing and strengthening, solidifying, and becoming easier to access. And I'm more and more trusting of that as time progresses, that this action might look crazy. It might look incongruous. It might look consistent. It might look inconsistent. It doesn't matter. What matters is it consistent with my innermost essence. So the action can change. The dharma doesn't. So how does that deal with identity? Identity is such an interesting thing, right? The word that we use in Sankhya philosophy, which we accept in Ayurveda and so many other Vedic vidyas, sciences, or kalas, arts, or teachers, texts, traditions of India, so many systems accept Sankhya philosophy. In Sankhya philosophy, ahankar is the aspect of the self that's like between the higher self and the lower self, the higher self being merging more and more with oneness and unity, and the lower self meaning identifying more and more with variety and difference through the five sense organs and our interaction with sensory objects. So we start to identify not with oneness, but we start to identify with differences. I am this, I am separate from you. I am in this country, which is separate from your country. I am doing this thing. I am eating this thing. I'm smelling this thing. I'm tasting this thing. I'm feeling this thing. All these things that we do and the ways that we interact in the world, we begin to identify with, and our focus goes out to those things. And where our focus goes, our ahankar follows, our prana follows, and our ahankar immediately, our I former, our ego, our identity wraps around that. And it's incredibly tenacious and subtle and almost instantaneous process. There's a study that I have mentioned many times, and I should probably figure out where it's from, but it goes something like this. And you have to use your imagination for this, but imagine there's a table with a tablecloth on it, and your arm is in a certain position under the tablecloth. So you can't see your own arm. It's in a certain position. Somebody puts on top of the table where you can see it, a prosthetic arm, like it's made out of rubber or plastic or something. And they put it in the same position that your invisible arm is in, your real arm. They lay that on top of the table. What happens is, after a few minutes of looking at that prosthetic arm, if they run a feather down that arm, I feel that my arm has a feather run down it. So this piece of plastic, this prosthetic limb that I have had no emotional or physical connection to, no history with, no relationship to previously, I now have it completely adopted as me. That's how fast the ahankar works. That's how fast the identity works. When we focus on something, even something we have zero connection with, we make it our own very quickly. So it's very easy to identify with what we're doing. So an identity crisis is, we can't help it. We identify with what we focus on. So if I'm focusing on you, I'm becoming you to a small degree. And they know with mirror neurons that this happens. If we focus on each other, certain neurons in our own brains start to fire that are firing in the brains of the people we're focusing on. We start to become each other very quickly. We start to identify with each other very quickly to one degree or another, depending on a number of factors, including how focused we are on that person or that thing. So a crisis is if we have been focusing on something externally, something that we do, a relationship that we're in, an idea we have about ourselves. If we've been focusing on that for a long time, that is very tightly woven into our ahankar, into our identity. If that thing that we're doing, relationship we're in, whatever, XYZ changes, that feels like we're threatened. You know, we lose a job. We feel like we're threatened, like we've got a knife in our back, you know, or in our gut. And nobody's doing it. We're healthy. We're likely to survive. We're likely to find another job. We're alive. We are safe. We are not being bombed. Why do we feel that we are being threatened? Because there is a death. We are the idea of who we are, which is pretty inseparable from our feelings of who we are, is being threatened. So it is like we have a knife in our gut, right? And so that's the whole thing with meditation. That's the whole thing with a spiritual practice, is to spend time every day, as much as we can, bringing our attention and our focus, diverting it from outward to inward, to identify with that innermost essence we've been talking about that I feel is Dharma, that innermost essence that I feel is the divine feminine, is the divine masculine. That doesn't change. Karma changes, focus changes. That innermost essence doesn't. And that's where, if we're focusing there, that doesn't change. There's no identity crisis to be had because that won't change. So having that connection beyond gender, beyond identification with outward stuff, that's the stuff that protects us from those kinds of crises, in my experience and understanding.
Are you deeply interested in becoming an intuitive healer? Are you obsessed with chakras, spirituality, tarot cards, and you want to build a divine connection with your spirit guides? Well, my signature Reiki 1 and 2 certification course launches January 3rd. This is a 4-week program to become an intuitive healer. You're going to learn my 4-step process on how to strengthen your intuitive gifts by clearing your energy, learning what unique intuitive gifts are bestowed upon you, and how you can start sharing them with your community. This is unlike any other Reiki program because not only are you clearing energetic blockages for your personal healing journey and being able to unlock your fullest potential, you're also going to have the resources and tools to learn how to start sharing your gifts immediately after the program. So you can actually start receiving compensation for your gifts and know exactly what kind of offerings you want to bring to the world. This is my signature program that I've been leading for over the past 5 years. I absolutely love seeing all the different types of healers that come into this program. They could be nurse practitioners, they could be licensed therapists, physical therapists, teachers. And it's so amazing seeing how each of the healers feel and experience this Reiki energy and express it in such a unique way. I've had lots of healers infuse this Reiki energy into their one-on-one sessions. I've had healers use them in their coaching programs and being able to teach and share the Reiki energy with others. There's so much in this program that I'm so excited for you to embody and step into your soul purpose. December 20th is the last day to sign up. So definitely, if you are interested, sign up with the link in the show notes. There's a payment plan option or an option to pay in full. And just for my sweet listeners, you can receive $111 off when you type in the code capital I am a healer. You will also receive a personalized goddess card reading from me when you sign up. I am so excited for you to step into the healer you were always meant to be. For more questions, you can email me at angelica@angelicarosenary.com. Now back to this episode.
I love that. And I feel like that mirrors Ayurveda so much because Ayurveda has so much practicality in it. And so if we were to mirror that too, we're in transition right now, going into Vata season, the most transitionary time of the year as we also go on to Navratri and light into darkness. And it's really interesting that Ayurveda has Dinacharya and what grounds you, what is stable. These are routines that do not change, although nature is changing all around us. And of course, we adjust our routines to that. But ultimately, these practices serve as that backbone and it helps to strengthen, like you said, that essence within us so that when things start to, identity starts to shift and what are seemingly reality, which is really just Maya, the illusion starts to really change. But at the heart of it, what is still true for all of us and all of that is, it's just so profound. It just honestly always blows me away how Ayurveda just always gets at the heart of it. And I've been thinking a lot. I brought this up in a lot of podcasts last year of there's so many dynamics to yoga and Ayurveda and how it's constantly evolving and dancing. And when we talk about the ancient texts, though, what's so beautiful, like taking the Yoga Sutras, for example, that was so relevant 5,000 years ago or even plus, and it's even more relevant right now. It's so amazing to me to think of it that way. And then it has me wanting to contemplate that with Ayurveda. And sometimes I wonder and I pause because Ayurveda can be so specific. And I wonder, but what parts and principles of Ayurveda can we learn to dance with that are still going to hold true given this relative times? Because it's the same with all the Vedas. That's how brilliant it is. It's no matter what time and place we are in, it's still going to be relevant. So do you see any aspects of Ayurveda, because they are so specific, do you see us having to see them in a different way given our modern context? And which principles do you see just really being that solid foundation?
Yeah. So in brief, you're looking at what stays the same and what's different. Since you said that you've been looking at this for a while, I'm curious, before I blab about this, what you've been finding. What have you been finding is the same, and what dances, what moves, and what stays still?
I've been finding that it may hold true at certain points in my life, but I find that what changes is my connection with it. So I learned Ayurveda from a very traditional and classical way, and I had to kind of step back and learn to see what my body was really telling me. And I realized, even though the ancient texts were saying something, eating specific diets for Pitta dosha, which is a dosha that I can relate to a lot and have imbalances, tendency towards, but they weren't working in my body at that time. And that's not to say that if you have a Pitta imbalance that they weren't working, but it was just relative to what I was experiencing at that time, for example, or all these lifestyle practices. I used to have a 4-hour morning routine and that just was not sustainable. And my body just didn't want that anymore. So I had to learn to dance with them. And that's not to say that those practices wouldn't provide stability for someone else, but they weren't right for me in that time. So it's almost like, I feel like my relationship to it is the thing that starts to change and evolve.
It's really beautiful. And it's sort of the macrocosm of what we were just talking about. If the innermost essence stays the same and the karmas, the actions change around it, it's the same thing in the macrocosm of Ayurveda, in exactly what you just said, that the principles remain the same. My understanding of those principles becomes refined over time. And I learn better how to apply those principles. And this is one of the principles of Ayurveda. I believe it's in Sushruta Samhita. Sushruta says, if you have a principle, no matter how sound it seems to be, if you look in yourself and it doesn't work for you, then you absolutely have to throw the principle away and look at what is real for you. I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but that's it. You know, so in a way, to me, and I'm making this up at the moment, maybe I'll feel differently tomorrow, but to me, what Ayurveda is, the whole thing is developing awareness of reality. To elaborate on that, the reality of relationship. What happens to me in this situation? what happens to me in this moment? What happens to me when I eat this food? How do I feel? How do I feel in this moment? Where is the prana stuck in this moment? Where is the heat? Where is the erratic movement? Where is the stuckness? What can I do to cool that heat down, warm that cold spot up? What can I do to remove obstructions from free-flowing vayu, free-flowing prana? What can I do to move obstructions? How can I breathe to do that? How can I be in relationship to do that? How can I move my body to do that? How can I eat my lunch to do that? So it's this choice for awareness, awareness of reality, awareness of the reality of relationship between my organism and my environment. How am I going to affect it? How is it going to affect me? How can I cooperate with that in such a way that reality is unobstructed, that prana is unobstructed, that flow is unobstructed, that digestion is unobstructed, that stability is unobstructed, that these primal experiences are allowed to be without being obstructed. So bringing it back to what is Ayurveda, it's choosing to live in awareness. And so when we're living in awareness, it's that dedication to awareness of the internal terrain that is stable. Everything else is mobile all the time. And so my relationship to everything else, refining my relationship to that reality with my innermost essence, with my awareness, with my inner terrain.
I love that so much because I think that's often the most misconstrued aspect of Ayurveda, is that it teaches you embodiment, to live in body, to validate your experiences through body, to source your power from within. And I think that I'm talking from my own experience, I have seen others fall to this, is you can source your power into something that seems outside of yourself, of, oh, this Ayurveda says, do this, don't do that. There's this right and wrong, which, you know, we can link back to kind of like this patriarchy, misogyny, colonialistic society that we kind of have, and how there has to be a right and a wrong type of thing happening here. And it's really not saying that, it's missing the point. And I think that's when people miss the boat of understanding Ayurveda, that it's not telling you what diet to eat and what not to eat. It's telling you to validate it through your own body experiences, just as the Vedas say in yoga. This means absolutely nothing if you cannot validate it through your own direct experience, that they use that language, direct experience. How are you interacting with the divine? Do these practices work for you? And that's been so much my journey of, in this moment, reconnecting back to Ayurveda and realizing this sense of embodiment that has brought. It's just, it's mind-blowing to come to that and to really source your power from within.
Absolutely, sourcing the power from within. And it's interesting, like, you know, one of the questions is here is like, from a certain perspective, how do we know what we know? How do we know Ayurveda is real? How do we know this model of reality is real? How do we know anything is real? How do we know anything? And Ayurveda accepts 3, sometimes 4 valid forms of knowledge. And one is apta, which is testimony of the authorities, like the sages and the books written by the sages, you know, the different texts that we rely on, these ancient texts. That's one form of knowledge. And, you know, that is an imperfect form because times change, interpretations change, translations are faulty, and so forth. But that is one place we can look. And another valid form of knowledge is inference, which really is a fancy word for guess. You know, we're guessing using some kind of information. We're guessing what must have happened to this person in the past to bring them here where they are, for example, if we're seeing a patient. And if I see certain things going on with you right now, what does that mean that is going on internally, right? I can use sort of present inference, and I can always also use inference for the future. Okay, this is what you've been doing. These are your actions now. Where are you likely to go and end up if you continue doing that? This beautiful role of holistic medicine, right, is interrupting a trajectory that doesn't look so good, making little tweaks, right? So that's a valid form. And then the other one is pratyaksha, observation. And often this is taken as you observe something out there with your own eyes and therefore you know it is real and that is knowledge. But I think a more subtle way of understanding that and a powerful way of understanding that is pratyaksha, inner pratyaksha, turning that gaze inwardly. Pratyaksha is perception, right? So perceiving what's going on in our own bodies. That is a valid form of knowledge. And that is a very powerful one. So yes, we have the texts that we can look to as a valid form of knowledge, but direct perception ourselves internally looking inside, that is a valid form of knowledge, even according to Ayurveda, right?
Yeah. I was reading your article, I think it was about a year or so ago, you posted an article about Ayurveda and culture appropriation. And I was really looking for a leader in that space to really dive into this because I was questioning that a lot. And I think this kind of interplays with this conversation, and you may have even brought these definitions and topics into that article of what really signifies us as finding truth and integrity when we're sharing Ayurveda. And it's almost like I felt like I was dancing a really fine line of I want to have my unique relationship with Ayurveda to express that with others, to inspire them and to also connect them to this beautiful science. But also I know I'm walking a fine line because I want to honor the ancient lineage. I want to honor the traditions that where it came from. And it was kind of this balancing act here. And you brought up such great checkpoints. I actually made sure I implemented them within my programs and with my offerings with my clients to be sure that we are in integrity. And yeah, I guess I'm just curious on, we're always dancing with these topics. So I'm curious, what are your current thoughts on cultural appropriation in Ayurveda?
Well, for the listeners, please read that article. Maybe you could post a link to that article because I don't want to just regurgitate what that article said. But I've been thinking about that a little bit more. Like, I take my cues very much from my guru. And my guru was born into the Sikh religion. He entered into a spiritual path that is not identified as Sikhism. And my spiritual guru was also a Vaidya. So my spiritual guru was born into a Sikh religion, practiced this other more esoteric tradition within this other lineage. And his teacher for Ayurveda was a Muslim gentleman. So it's interesting, you know, India has a very inclusive tradition, you know, within other, there may be certain lines that don't feel inclusive that are exclusive and specifically say, no, nobody besides our family is going to learn this material. My guru was very happy that I was studying Ayurveda, and he'd never talked about cultural appropriation. And so it's interesting because, okay, I'm taking my cues from him, but I've had to use inference, one of the valid forms of knowledge, to infer why he didn't talk about this specifically, why he was okay with me doing this. And in terms of how he taught me, what was he emphasizing that is important in this question of cultural appropriation? So if I'm taking my cues from this and looking at it, the fact that he thought it was fine that I was doing it, that's important. The fact that he was Sikh, learned from a Muslim teacher, something that many consider a Hindu related subject, that tells me something. The main thing I think for me personally that I come away with from this is, what did he emphasize? He emphasized weeding out our flaws. He emphasized purity in thought, word, and deed, and weeding out rajas and tamas in the mind. Every night, you know, he would say, do a diary, look at your thoughts, words, and deeds in these different categories that are very similar to the yamas and niyamas. So where was the greed? Where was the anger? Where was the attachment? Where was the violence in thought, word, or deed? Where was that? And I think when I look at that, what feels like getting into cultural appropriation territory that is damaging is when I'm engaging with this material from a place of greed, from a place of clutching, from a place of attachment, that the problem is not that I'm engaging with this material. The problem is when I engage with this material for greed or for some other purpose besides being in alignment with my innermost essence and interacting with reality minute by minute as it comes to me. So if at some point all of my interaction in Ayurvedic world and with Ayurvedic other Ayurvedic students besides myself and the community, if that all went away, I would have to be fine with that because that's reality. But reality is bringing that right in front of my face, moment to moment to moment. So how am I interacting with that reality? Am I clutching? Am I trying to take more than I need from it? Am I trying to project something that's unreal about myself onto the canvas of social media, right? What am I doing with that that is not in integrity? That becomes problematic, whether we call that cultural appropriation because it's damaging, that ends up having a damaging effect on Ayurveda, on the culture that it came from, et cetera, or whether for one reason or another, that's going to be damaging, whether we call it cultural appropriation or whatever we call it, that's going to be where the damage comes in. Those are my thoughts about it now. Thanks for asking and thanks for paying attention. I think this is an important conversation we need to be having, all of us, whether we're in India or not in India, you know, whatever culture we come from, say, okay, well, what is my relationship to this? Do I feel like, yeah, self introspect about this?
Yeah, thank you so much. And I'll definitely link the article here because you have such clear checkpoints where everyone can really understand how they can connect with this beautiful science in a really authentic way. And some of the points that I just want to highlight is knowing lineage of where your teacher is coming from is super important. And I think that comes up a lot in question. At least my community members are always asking me where I received my education and where to come from. And that's such a great question. And then something that also really stood out for me was that consistent self-inquiry and what you're expressing of this is what it is and what it means right now, but where are my thoughts? Where are the gunas of the mind later on? You know, have I lost the plot? Have I gotten too far away from it? Am I disconnected from my actual dharmic intention for this? It's something really great to ponder. And yeah, I thank you for that clarity. I think that there was a lot of confusion and there still kind of is in the scene here. And it's so needed, you know, this Ayurvedic science is so needed for those who are ready to step up. And I think that already healers can want to hide, want to not show their gifts, want to not express due to their own fears that they have. And it's really important to get behind these topics and understand the meaning behind all of them. I had one more question, and it's more so kind of on the basics. And I get this question so much in my community, and I've honestly been questioning it myself too, is it's always a confusion between Prakruti, the constitution, and Vikruti, the current imbalance. And I mean, one of the most common things that I always get in my community for those who are just beginners in Ayurveda is, what is my dosha? How do I know what my imbalance is? And everyone always asks me, can your constitution change? And I was always taught, you know, no, that's just like your natal birth chart. It's always the same. And then the only time I questioned it actually was when a mother went through birth and she felt different. She felt like she was in a new body. And she said that I feel like my constitution has shifted. And I've been pondering that ever since. And I'm wondering if it's because when we go through these transitions of life, we go through the kapha, the pitta, and the vata phase, if that has anything to do with it. But I'm curious if you noticed the transition into being a mother, if that can ever shift the constitution, or if any externalities can shift the constitution, or is it just our perception of all the other doshas that are at play at that time?
The first thing I would say is that we start getting confused if we think that the model of Prakriti and Vikriti is reality and don't see it for what it is, which is an imperfect model of reality. And if we get too constricted around this is the reality, how can I make my experience conform to the reality? It's not going to be all that elegant. It's not going to be as fluid as reality itself. So the general model is saying, in general, you're going to have a Prakriti that is pretty stable throughout your life. There's going to be a lot of changes that happen to it. You know, there's Deha Prakriti and Dosha Prakriti and Janma Prakriti and these other terms that I don't really want to go into right now, in part because I've heard them talked about in different ways. So if you get too constricted around what are the different kinds of Prakriti and what do they mean, you get behind one teacher's definition of that and dialogue around that. And then you read something else somewhere, then that's going to confuse even more. But there are these ideas that Vikriti can encroach on Prakriti so much that it feels like the Prakriti changes, that the current condition can become so powerful and so long lasting that it feels like it has this Prakriti level, permanent level change. Certainly, I've seen women feel like they're in entirely new bodies after they've given birth, also after menopause, whole different scene, also before menarche and after menarche, right? It's unbelievable what happens at menarche. It's unbelievable what happens at menopause. Incredible. What's happening at menopause? The entire endocrine system, arguably the most deep, powerful, influential system of the body, is reorganizing. I mean, you are a different person on the other end of that. You know, one way I like to think of that is, you know, in Chinese medicine, they say that women's physiology is rooted in blood and men's physiology is rooted in qi, which is to say prana. Well, from a certain perspective, if we're looking at that, we could say that a woman's physiology before menopause is rooted in blood and after menopause is rooted in qi, in prana. Mm-hmm. So there's this whole change of physiology. Yes, you are different. It's a different system. Does that mean your Prakriti is different? You can't answer that because Prakriti isn't reality. It's a model of reality, right? So you could say that some things about your constitution are the same and some things have been different. So I don't like to get too hung up on this is my Prakriti, this can't change, these things can. The Prakriti idea gives an idea. Some things are pretty permanent. What are those things? When I feel in balance, what are my gifts? What did I come in with? Are they tend to be more vata, pitta, or kapha? You know, I will say in my own life, I had three different excellent, very experienced Ayurvedic practitioners give me three different Prakriti readings by the time I was 25. So there was something of value in each one of those that I got, that I resonated with, and that I've seen. Yes, this aspect of what they were seeing has been pretty stable in my life. I don't think it's a good idea to get too attached, certainly, to your idea, our idea, my idea of Prakriti, or somebody else's idea of what my Prakriti is, until I know what my constitution is. And I might be in my 50s before I feel confident. I'm like, yeah, no, I know this is what my body tends to do, right? I think it's a good idea not, certainly, to get too attached to, oh, yes, my numbers are 1, 3, 2, or 1, 3, 2, 1, or 1, 2, 3, or whatever, you know, vata predominant, pitta secondary. But you, sometimes it's very clear. Sometimes it's not so clear. And we could get it wrong and then coalesce around an idea, try to identify, you know, wrap our identity around something that it's not even reality. It's a model of reality. So be fluid with that. I think what is more useful and easier for certainly beginning to intermediate, sometimes to advanced student or practitioner of Ayurveda, it's easier to, and more practical in some ways, to pinpoint what the Vikriti is. What's the current condition? What's out of whack? That's pretty easy to say, okay, there's anxiety. It's a vata thing, you know, and bring it back. It's as simple as that. And not to get too complicated even with that, if that's confusing and all three doshas are kind of, you know, like not sure what's pushing what and what's going on, go to the gunas. The gunas, there's not three, there's two. There's grounding, nourishing gunas, and there's stimulating, motivating gunas. And there's 10 of each. You go to those and increase our self-awareness about which one is active at any moment, which one is overactive, which one is over-present, which one is under-present, and tame or nourish accordingly. that makes it really simple, and it keeps it like, okay, what am I feeling? Like, go inside and forget the gunas, the names of the gunas. Go inside again, turn that awareness inside and say, what am I feeling and where? How can I describe it with qualities? And I can use opposite qualities to that to bring it back into balance.
I love how these conversations always have a common theme, and somehow the questions always seem so different when I write them, but yet you just like bundle them up like a beautiful book and a bow on top. And really it's just coming back to our essence, embodying it, checking in with body first. And we have all these different references that are great, but we can't take them as the end all be all. That is the last call. Like, our bodies are the call, and how we interact and use these resources is truly what the answer is. And just to end on more of a fun note, I'm curious, you know, you mentioned meditation is something that you tap into to tune into the divine essence. And I also love that there's so many quote unquote non-spiritual practices that we can use to tune into the divine essence in ways that really surprise us. And I'm curious if you have any of those that are maybe not so rigid, like in your practice, but just kind of embodied in your life that help you to tune into the divine.
Yeah. Well, first I want to go back to something that you said. It all comes down to listening to the body or attending to the body. And by body and by listening to the self, I don't mean just the physical body, like, oh, my elbow hurts, my stomach hurts, oh, my back hurts. It's not just the body. The body is one kosha, the Annamaya kosha, right? Made of physical muscles and tissues and all of this kind of stuff. The Pranamaya kosha is the energy body, and that includes those tissues and extends out. And then the Manomaya kosha, which are the only three of the five or more that I want to talk about here, but the Manomaya kosha goes anywhere in there. So when I'm turning my attention into the quote body, it's not so much the muscles and the organs and the tissues, although I might feel something in the muscles and the organs and the tissues, but going to that place where I'm feeling that thing in the tissues and connecting to the prana experience at that point. So is the prana, is the energy there constricted? Is it stuck? Is it black? Is it empty? Breathing into that and letting that obstruction, that stickiness, that emptiness resolve and dissolve. So that's kind of more than the body. It's like going inside to the different layers. So I would say if there's a spiritual practice, my guru was very clear with me never to give spiritual practices. But I would say in terms of like connecting with the divine, going into those subtler levels from the physical, you know, okay, I identify there's a physical sensation somewhere in my body. Let me imagine that to be an energetic sensation within the energetic body. Let me go into the essence of that. Let me resolve and dissolve that. That tends to release the obstruction to smooth flow of prana. Smooth flow of prana ends up having a sattva promoting effect on the mind, that sattva being that clarity, right? That's not spiritual enlightenment. That's not the be all and the end all. That's just a means to the end. However, that means is very pleasant, right? And it does seem to be a prerequisite to some kind of spiritual practice being easier to practice, more successful, in air quotes, to practice, more fruitful to practice. So forget about spiritual practices. The prerequisites to spiritual practices themselves can feel divine and can feel like an invitation to the divine. And so that's something that I can practice every day. So, you know, I can walk into a room, feel some kind of presence or situation or activity or relationship or sentence from somebody that I respond to by clenching, you know, by tightening up, by feeling anxious or something. And so at that moment, nobody knows, has to know what I'm doing. I'm not holding up a placard. I'm not teaching it. I'm not saying, hey, I need a timeout. I'm going to practice this. I'm just doing it in the middle of Thanksgiving, in the middle of a holiday with family, in the middle of whatever, whatever is going on, taking a moment and turning my awareness inside, bringing it to wherever that sensation is and releasing that, breathing into it, giving it space, dissolving and resolving my resistance to reality, whatever that is at that moment. That to me feels like an invitation to the divine. And that feels like something I can practice anytime, anywhere, with my eyes open or closed. Nobody has to know that I'm doing it, but it's part of my spiritual practice.
Wow. That is so powerful. And I'm so grateful that you walked our community through that so they can practice that in real time and feel that. And I simply love that practice because it's so true. We can get triggered all the time in our daily lives. And I talk about this all the time, how for me, it's just bringing the awareness of in the moment when I do. It's more so I have a self-reflection practice after to say, hey, that really did cause something in me. And so it's so inspiring to know that you have like a real-time practice and what that looks like. That practicality behind that is super beautiful. Oh, and one last question that I want to ask you, Dr. Claudia Welch. Do you have any courses or anything coming out that our community can connect with you on?
Yes, I would just love everybody to come here. There's a project that seven other people and I have been working on for a few years. It's called satsangam.net, S-A-T, which means truth, sangam, which means confluence. So S-A-T-S-A-N-G-A-M.net. Not .com, but .net, because we're all connected, right? And in that, you might really enjoy exploring the life map. Go to there and explore the life map, which looks at Ayurveda and yoga and Sanskrit and dance, looks at how everything, all these Indian sciences and arts are connected and how they're inspired by various Indian teachers, texts, and traditions. One of the things I think we've been doing as Western or non-Indian students of Vedic sciences and arts is we've been picking one that we want to learn or two. I want to learn Ayurveda. I want to learn yoga. I want to learn Ayurveda and yoga. And so we're learning an Eastern science in this very Western way, focusing on that thing that we're learning, without understanding the context in which they exist. And it's not that we're evil, it's that we don't know. We really are so ignorant about what we talk about, what the sister sciences are, but we don't even really know what they are. Yoga and Ayurveda are not sister sciences to speak of. Ayurveda is considered a science. Yoga is considered a darshana, a philosophy. And they are connected through all these different threads and connections in the Vedic knowledge systems. So it helps orient us to what our field is, what our subject is in the context of all of these other Vedic knowledge systems. And my friend and colleague, Dr. Ram Kumarji, and I plan to co-facilitate a course starting October 5th. So in less than a month from now, called Vedic Threads. And so in this course, it'll be a membership-based course. We'll meet twice a month for an hour and a half is the idea. And we'll take different topics. So we'll take like an idea or a topic or a thread. And we'll say, let's say it's prana versus shakti. What's the difference? They're both translated as energy a lot of the time. What are the differences between prana versus shakti? And like, for example, we'll have these two guest instructors, Dr. Robert Svoboda and Carolina Prada. One is an Ayurvedic physician, one is a traditional Odissi dance performer and Kalari Payet practitioner, which is a martial art in southern India. And they're going to be talking about the role of prana versus shakti in Ayurveda versus dance and martial art, et cetera. So we start seeing, for example, if we look at prana and shakti in Ayurveda, we have these particular ideas of what they are in Ayurveda. But when we see how somebody uses those ideas and practices those ideas and embodies those ideas in dance or in Kalari Payet, that will have no alternative but to broaden our understanding of what these ideas mean. So I'm really excited about that course, and I don't use the word excited often.
Wow. I'm so excited for that course as well. I think that is so so great for continuing education. And I think that's so needed because we see such a segmentation, you know, this polarity world where we're constantly separating things, even in the yoga tradition. If you look on that micro level of mantra and then the poses and then the breath, and really it's like, how does this all come together? And I love that you're dipping into other cultures as well. That sounds like a beautiful offering. And I'll be sure to link that in the show notes so that everyone can get to know that community even more.
Wonderful. It's a new community and I'm really excited about it. It's been a vision that we've all been coalescing around for a while. So it'll be great to have our communities merge. So that'll be lovely. Thanks so much.
For sure.
Thanks, Angelica. I love your questions. Thank you so much for your dedication to truth so far as we can touch it.
Thank you. These conversations are so nourishing to the soul. And I love just getting to expand and talk about the microcosm, the macrocosm. It's always enlightening. And I'm really grateful for your time and your teachings and all the beautiful work that you do in our world. Thank you.
Thanks so much. And maybe before we sign off, maybe everybody could do this with us. Maybe we could just take 15 seconds of quiet just to absorb.
Thank you, Dr. Claudia Welch. And thank you to all of our listeners for being here. I will see you next time on the next episode.
I hope you can truly just sit and bask in the high frequency that is Dr. Claudia Welch. She is a wealth of knowledge, and I certainly am overjoyed to be in her presence whenever I can. If you love this episode, please share it with a friend or family member who would love it too. Let's grow this community. It's my favorite thing ever. And if you haven't already reached out to me on Instagram in the direct messages, I love connecting with you all here and hearing which episodes are your favorite, why it resonates with you. Do not hesitate to reach out. I promise I read every single message and I respond to you, sometimes even with a voice note because I love to keep it personal. So please connect with me further on Instagram at Angelica Feminine Healer. And if you want to connect with Dr. Claudia Welch, I have her link in the show notes to get more of her expansive and ever evolving knowledge. All right, everyone, enjoy the rest of your day and I'll see you next time.